Well, then I may ask, are there interventions to the papers of Mr. Griffin and of Mr. Shaw? Mr. Griffin, do you want a concluding remark on your own paper to give now? Yes, just come up.
On the question of whether we should be happy about this transfer of power from the owner to the managers, I was really not talking about what I would recommend. I was recognizing the facts of life. And if we are going to have as many as 2 million stockholders of the American Telephone Telegraph Company, no one of these stockholders owning as much as 0.5% of the stock of the company, then I really don't see how you're going to have a genuine control on the part of the stockholders. Oh, of course, in very extreme cases, you can have a stockholders' revolt, as it's sometimes called. We did in the case of the New York Central Railroad. If things get too bad, you can have and Montgomery Ward, you had one. You can have then a sort of a revolt. But as for day-by-day control, I don't see how we can possibly avoid it if you're going to have the widespread ownership. And it seems to me that widespread ownership of American industries is highly desirable. So let's look also at the question of how much of power has been lost. I think that the theory of power has not been adequately developed to my knowledge. I've not seen a theoretical treatment of just what power consists of. But it seems to me that property, private property, and the power that goes with private property implies ordinarily the power to direct the use, control the use of this property. Let's take a farmer who owns a cow. We can say that the farmer has control over this cow. And he can take physical possession of the thing. This is the second aspect of ownership. He has the right to receive benefits, the fruits, the benefits. Which is another aspect of ownership. And the fourth right of ownership, which is a very important one, is the right of transfer. This was brought out, the importance of this last one, was brought out by, brought to my mind, by a statement which Mr. Burley makes someplace in one of his writings. This is Mr. A.A. Burley. Somebody asked me this morning who this man was. This A.A. Burley, who was one time Undersecretary of State of the United States, who has written his most recent book is Power Without Property, a very interesting book. But in one of his writings, I think it's in that book, he says, if Mr. Khrushchev were talking to the people of Russia about the steel industry, he could say to them, you own this industry. It is true you do not have the right to direct the operation of the industry. You do not have the right to take physical possession of any part of the plant and equipment to carry it away. But you do have the right to receive the benefits. And you, as citizens, as owners of the steel industry of Russia, you receive the benefits. Now, he said, in all candor, what more could the president of American Telephone and Telegraph Company say to the stockholders of his company? 2 million of them. He could say, you, the stockholders, own this company. It is true you do not have the right to direct how it is going to be operated. You cannot take physical possession. The fact that you own so many shares of AT&T does not entitle you to walk away with a telephone post. But you do have the right to receive the benefits, and the two are on all four. The two are on all fours together. The president of AT&T says Mr. Burley could not say any more than Mr. Khrushchev could say. I beg to differ with Mr. Burley. There is one important thing that the stockholder of AT&T can do, and this is to sell his stock. The owner of the Russian owner of part of the Soviet steel industry can't sell part of his stock. So I think that
we must look at this question of ownership. Ownership is a rather slippery term that has a number of different aspects, and it seems to me that some of the most important aspects are still left with
the owner.
At any rate, I think one of the most important features, most important requirements
of the operation of the system to be consistent with the rationale of a free enterprise system is the pursuit of profits. And the pursuit of profits, it seems to me, is just as distinctly true today under the management control as it was under owner control. Indeed, I don't see any difference in the operational policies of companies that are owner controlled and those that are management controlled. It happens in the automobile industry. We have a very striking case, as the Ford Motor Company has until recently been owner controlled, owned by the family, by the Ford family. General Motors, on the other hand, owned by some 700 or 800,000 stockholders. Management control in the case of General Motors, owner control in the case of the Ford Motor Company. I actually can't see any difference in the policies. They are both competitive. They're both trying to advance the interest of the corporation as such. Ford wants to advance the interest of the Ford Corporation as against in competition with General Motors Corporation and vice versa. So really, the essence of what I'm trying to say is that I don't think we need to worry too much about this. I think as long as you have the discipline of the market, and now that's a pretty big caveat, the discipline of the market consists of competition. As long as you have competition, then I don't particularly care whether the corporation is controlled by the owner or the stockholders, or whether it is controlled by the managers. The preservation of competition, it seems to me, is the essence of it. Since I fear that I may have appeared here somewhat as the sort of a protagonist of big business, I want to say that I yield to nobody in my support of the antitrust laws, that competition must be maintained. I do not go so far as to say that the government ought not to intervene when it comes to mergers, when it comes to various other activities that are in violation of the present antitrust laws. I do feel, and I can only make a general statement on this, not taking time to defend my position, but I do feel that this is a major responsibility of government to preserve a competitive system. Government, in effect, ought to say to the businessman, you may do anything you please. Charge as much as you wish for a product. Produce as good a product as you wish. Produce as much of the product as you wish. Sell it in any way you wish, at any price you wish. Run your affairs in any way you wish, provided only, one, that you act independently and individually. You don't gang up on people. In other words, that you maintain competition. And this preservation of competition does require the action of the state. And I think that a genuine defender of a private property system, whether it include big business or small business or medium-sized business or whatever it is, must recognize that a private property system is only going to appeal to the people of the country and only going to secure reasonably secure support if it is a competitive system. To put it just in a word, finally then, a private property system, a free enterprise system without competition is like Hamlet without the Prince of Denmark. The enterprising part, the competition part, is the essence, it seems to me, of free enterprise, and not simply private ownership. Thank you, sir.